Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Going green and sustainability are words we hear a lot these days as environmental organizations seek to increase awareness of our environmental responsibilities. Whether it's government, the business community, or any of us as individuals, how well is our environmental stewardship, I should ask? How well is it working? We're going to be talking about what progress is being made in making the region more sustainable and what more needs to be done. Joining me in studio to talk about it, Gene Ponzi, Green Resources Manager at the Earthway Center of the Missouri Botanical Garden. It promotes conservation of energy and natural resources. Emily Andrews is Executive Director of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the Green Building Council, which promotes environmentally responsible places to live and work. Craig Young, founder and CEO of St. Louis Green, Inc., which is committed to improving sustainable lifestyles. Thank you all so much for being with us today. Nice to see you all again.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Gene, I'll start with you, and I'll really put the same question to all of you coming at it from your individual perspectives. How well are we doing in this area as far as our green report card is concerned?
Well, Don, you used the word awareness in your introduction, and I would add a word to that. There's certainly more awareness to be raised, but integration is one of the things that's really happening in our region, where green thinking, understanding kind of how sustainability, how green is the one-syllable word for that for me, is works in our lives, the thinking, the practice, in everyday practice, incorporating things into our values, that whole level of literacy is really being integrated in a lot of ways in our community, and it's definitely mainstream. When we first had these conversations 5-6 years ago, it was very fringe, and for most of the time that I've been in this green communications business, it was so fringe you had to shoehorn your way in to have the conversation. So there are still a lot of people learning the language, figuring out why sustainability is important to them. But there is a lot of integration going on, and that's a big change.
And you've seen it grow.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Emily, how about you?
Well, with the green building world, I think we see more and more people who are interested in incorporating green building practices into their into the design, the construction, and the maintenance and operations of their building. And that's the interest in that is growing all the time, I think. And it's always getting bigger. 10 years ago when the chapter was founded, there was one LEED certified building. Today, there are 130 commercial certified buildings, another 70 residential, and many, many more buildings that are incorporating green into their, you know, into their ongoing maintenance and operation. This building, for example, that we're in right now, which is really exciting. So we see an increase in that. People talking about it in a way that it's like Gene said, it's mainstream. It used to be that when you were using low VOC paints, which is volatile organic compounds, you know, something you don't want to be breathing, that was very fringe. It was very difficult to buy those as an individual or even as a, you know, a commercial building. Today, it's standard practice. People using those things all the time.
You would, I would hope, tell us what LEED certification means because not everybody knows.
I'd love to. Yeah. LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, and it is a green building rating system that that measures the design, the construction, and the maintenance operation of a building using sustainable standards. So it's a really great tool to assess how you're doing with a building.
We have to be careful of using jargon because
sure.
not everybody is yeah. familiar with the terms that you use every day. Craig, let me turn to you now with regard to how well you think we're doing.
It's been great. I think it's that A for effort that's going on. We, you know, as like Gene brought up, we'd say, you know, a lot of people would think green was just a color. You know, 5 years ago in sustainability, a lot of people wouldn't know how to spell it. That was kind of like, oh, wait, what are we really doing here? So, but now it's just, it's starting to be common practice for people. You're seeing it in all the schools. We're seeing it with our sports teams. We're seeing it with just everybody's daily lives that, you know, the county's recycling in everybody's homes now. So it's just, it's more of a mainstream portion of what we're seeing today. So it's great. It's great.
One thing, Gene, you know, you talk about integration. You talk about people knowing a lot more today than they did a couple of years ago. One of the things I've noticed is that this subject has been conspicuously absent from the political dialogue that we've been hearing.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, I thought you might
think
it
was
kind of a big hole in the action.
What is going on here? I mean, this is an important subject. They're afraid to talk about global warming and some of the things that are critical to our understanding.
I was listening to a program on your network last night about Arctic ice melting and the degree to which and I just downloaded a report the other day about climate change. And the elephant in the room, I think, is the couple of industries that stand to lose the most by having a redefinition, a redesign of what we do that belches carbon into the atmosphere that's causing climate change. Carbon and other, of course, other greenhouse gases. The fossil fuel industry, the power industry, those things don't have to go away, but really serious transformation of how we relate to fossil fuels and their their aftermath, in the same way that the U.S. Green Building Council, their mission is to transform the way we build and operate and live and use in our buildings, not incrementally influence. But that level of transformation, because of all of the dollars from those interests, those political and special and business interests that are pumping into our mainstream politics, that's why we're not hearing about that stuff in this country. But if you listen to elections in other countries, many of the ones that have participated in the UN climate summits and ratified things like those climate action treaties, you will hear a very different kind of political dialogue. However, coming up from the grassroots, and it's not just the individual, you know, Joe and Jane grassroots, it's the business sector in our community. It's big players in big industries like the Cardinals in the sporting industry that Craig mentioned. It's a movement in a sector of the building industry that cuts across all the specialties where the green traction is really happening and where that transformation is happening. So if you want to focus on where green is happening, that's where you have to put the focus. I'm very disappointed that we're not hearing any of that other than tiny little lip service, single syllable words in the political dialogue. But frankly, I'm not surprised.
Emily, do you think local government is more responsible than folks at the national level are right now?
Personally, I think that everyone must be responsible for this. But I do think that local governments have created a real movement around combating climate change and addressing greenhouse gas emissions. And that has been through the Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, which is a national effort for cities to address this. And locally, we have many, many local governments that have addressed this, that have signed on to the Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, that have done greenhouse gas inventories, that have made commitments to lower their greenhouse gas emissions by certain percentages, by certain years, and then are actually taking steps to make those changes that will influence their emissions. And so we're seeing a lot of activity in that realm, I think, and we'll continue to do so.
Are the legal requirements for you, and when it comes to building, to meet certain LEED standards, for instance?
LEED is a voluntary rating system, and so there really are no requirements for that. It's all really done on a voluntary basis. Sometimes cities will make that requirement of themselves. The city of St. Louis, the city of Clayton have required that any of their buildings that are funded by the city and will be city-owned and operated be LEED certified.
Do we need more government involvement in this whole area, Craig?
I think so. We look at it, and I was thinking about all the issues that everybody's talking about right now, and we don't hear anything really about the environment. And it kind of reminds me of that. It's always the kind of the last to get addressed. But if we look at it and seeing that the local push, we work with a lot of municipalities that are just doing simple things within their groups, and they're sharing that. And even if it's small recycling efforts, like having an electronics drive, but they're starting to get a fever for it and starting to get some ideas around it, what they can do. So green is pushed from the grassroots, as Gene was saying. It is really a grassroots effort, and the businesses are catching on. So are the municipalities. It's also starting to affect the other green, which the monetary green. So people are starting to see that side of it, and they're really making a connection. So the local governments are definitely need to we need to keep that effort. That's for sure.
I try to think about the ways in which I like to work in analogies a lot when I'm teaching people and working with people. And I like to look at the ways in which transformation has happened in other societal movements. Diversity is a really big one. And that started, you know, part of that is the integration of women, the value of women into the workforce, into government, equal pay for equal work. We haven't quite gotten to that level yet, so, you know, there's still some job security for some folks out there. Diversity, valuing the cultural contributions and valuing the unique perspectives of people of different nationalities, of people of different races, and seeing how that enriches our society and enriches our lives. And the naysayers against those things, there were the same kinds of voices that said, if you let this happen, such and such will collapse. We see that same kind of naysaying, if you let this change happen, it's going to collapse. So how do we, as environmental education and communication professionals, get the message across to people so that we can see as a species how our lives can be richer, how our societies can be richer and more diverse, and how businesses can continue to thrive and then get around the really disservice of misinformation from some interests that say, if you take this seriously, everything will collapse. Well, they might collapse, or they might just have to change those special interests. Not necessarily go away, but change.
What are some of the things that business, for instance, is doing that is a positive?
The big shout out I have to give Don Marsh is to the RCGA St. Louis Green Business Challenge, which is a program that's now in its third year. And our Regional Chamber and Growth Association back in 2010 adapted a categorized point-based scorecard, a checklist, if we will, which is exactly the kind of tool that LEED is in the building industry, and recruited many of its member businesses. The first year there were 50-some. Now, after 3 years, there are 100 of our major businesses that have gone through this process to use a checklist to form green teams, groups of employees who can address this stuff, to implement policies that are, some of them, they're real no-brainers, like we'll only buy Energy Star qualified appliances. You can hardly not buy them anymore. To more far-reaching, this is our sustainability policy for our corporation, and this is how it dovetails with our social justice concerns and with our profit-making concerns. Across our business sector, our big business sector, we have a level of sustainability literacy now, and hopefully we'll get to talk about some of the businesses. Craig already mentioned the Cardinals, who are hugely influential, that have been a part of developing this literacy and integrating green into their operations, and then using creative thinking to make that green practice turn a green profit, if not outright profit, at least savings at first. When you change your thinking, you can change the outcomes.
And if you're going to save money or make money in the process, that's going to accelerate that process.
And I think that makes really good sense. Let's let green be green, but do it in a way that is really sensible, where you, when you use sustainability triple bottom line thinking, that's business language for planning and evaluating your business practices, you take into account things that you normally don't monetize: environmental services, air quality, water quality, the availability of those things, the true cost of fossil fuels, the true cost of shipping things places, and you take into account and you monetize and you evaluate the human resources that go into that equation. That's a big change.
Emily and Craig, do you get the sense that Jean gets worked up when she starts talking about this sort of thing?
I thought I was being pretty calm there.
Jean inspires us all.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to take a break now. We're talking about Jean Ponzi, Green Resources Manager at the Earthways Center of the Missouri Botanical Garden. She joins me in studio. Also here, Emily Andrews, Executive Director of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the Green Building Council. Craig Young is founder of St. Louis Green, Inc., also with us in studio. We'll take a break now, come back, and we'll take your calls. What do you do to protect our environment and help the sustainability cause that we're talking about today? What should be done, do you think, that isn't being done at this time? Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, and you can also reach us through Facebook. And I'll ask Jay in Normandy to hang on through this break. We'll come back and take your call when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation dealing with how well we as a community are doing with regard to sustainability and maintain a very green presence here in the St. Louis region. My guest in studio, Jean Ponzi of the Missouri Botanical Garden, Green Resources Manager at the Earthways Center there. Emily Andrews is Executive Director of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the Green Building Council, and Craig Young also with us. He's the founder of St. Louis Green, Inc. I want to talk about a lot of things that we can do as individuals But I think we'll bring Jay in from Normandy first, because apparently Jay has some suggestions, and then we can take it from there. Jay, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks again, guys.
Can't hear you.
I try to be green as much as I can. I try to recycle, and in fact, right now I combine it with a little bike riding and picking up cans along the street up here. But that's one minor thing, but we all can do a lot better. I try to impress on people at work to try to at least recycle. But there are a couple other things we can do. I got something from East Peoria, Illinois the other day, how they have a pledge that they're trying to do, a no-idling pledge. And as we drive all these cars and go to these fast food restaurants, you know, we could go inside. I can't believe people sit outside sometimes and even eat their stuff in the car and let the car run, the air conditioning's on, et cetera, et cetera. And one other thing about air pollution, what can we do to stop this movement, apparently, to get rid of the rubber hoses, what do they call them, on the gas pumps that we have now that prevent the fuel from escaping or the vapors from escaping? You know, they're talking about getting rid of those hoses and being like Illinois, where you just have the single nozzle and not protected, you know. So what can we do to step up on that and fight that or oppose that?
All right, Jay, thank you so much for the call. I'm not sure that we have the answer to that last question here, but we'll certainly research it, and at some point we'll be able to maybe give you some more specific advice. But with regard to things we can do as individuals, there are so many things, and Craig, he really makes a point, does he not, by simple things like sitting in your car while you're eating that double Whopper or whatever.
Right, right. There, I think the county's I know they have an idling law, and I think it's 2 minutes that you're supposed to turn your car off. And
I've never heard of that.
Is it three? Is it three? Okay, so it is something that you will come to some campuses and they'll have some signage posted. We were in a school meeting the other day, and they talked about like carpool, like when you're waiting, when carpool, everybody's waiting till school lets out. At least let's turn off our engines until the line starts to move. So there's those are some simple things, but just the amount. I mean, if we're thinking hundreds of cars at every school, thousands that every could just turn off their car for three or four minutes while they're waiting.
It's also expensive to do that these days, no question. Now, you know, I've never heard that before, that there is an idling law.
You haven't been busted by the idling police?
I have not. I guess I've been a good boy.
When you hear that, you better watch out.
But really, why wouldn't I have heard of that? I mean, I don't live in a cave.
It's a pretty buried piece of legislation, I think,
there's
in the city.
There's no enforcement.
In the city and the county, and absolutely that's the bigger issue. There's no enforcement.
Right.
It's a difficult thing to enforce, and our police are busy doing other things.
Right.
Around schools, if you have parents who have concerns for their children's respiratory health, then it would be the parents who would call for the schools to talk to the bus company to enforce that no idling law and communicate that in the parent-teacher organization. And that kind of communication in small, kind of locally appropriate circles, that's where this stuff really gets integrated as opposed to regulation.
And it's not only the buses. I've seen many occasions outside of schools where parents in their SUVs are waiting for Junior and Jill, and
sure.
The engines are almost invariably running.
Right, right. It can be a big problem. One of the things we look at with these policies and these new green things, and that's something that we struggle with in the St. Louis region, is the marketing side of it. That we'll talk to like Clean Air Partnership, or we'll talk to these other groups, and they'll say, "Well, we'd love to tell everybody about it." Well, how much is that marketing value going to cost? Well, then when you go to your funders, if you're a small nonprofit, and you say, "Hey, can I have $20,000 to run ads?" They kind of look at you and say, "Well, you know," but that is a part that we don't hear a lot about. So,
and the whole thing about getting around town, you know, St. Louis is still a car town and a parking lot town, and people tend to think, I think they think of our transit system, except for MetroLink, as for poor people. Whereas that the slogan that Metro used in their last political campaign, some of us use it, all of us need it. That was really brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I know that Metro is working on integrating some new get-around methods on-street rapid transit, where you have buses that actually go through transit lanes as opposed to building more train tracks. And there's a big transit-oriented development evaluation going on in the East-West Gateway Council of Governments Regional Sustainability Plan for the region, which is HUD-funded. It's a big deal that we got that HUD grant to do that plan in our region. And looking at how we build our roads, maintain our roads, orient our communities so that people can get around better on transit. You know, if you've ever lived or worked in a place like New York or Toronto, where transit is really good, or San Francisco, it becomes a real benefit. And there are, and younger people moving into communities are part of the driver, part of the professional sector that calls for that to transform our communities. We're not going to see it overnight, but the moves are in the works.
And I would say there's a very vibrant conversation going on right now in the city around making it a more livable place related to transportation. In fact, I was just at a session this morning talking about this very thing. And it's not true that St. Louis is only a car city, because anyone 16 or under doesn't drive. And a lot of people who are of a certain age that are older don't drive. So we have a very large population that is relying on walking their own 2 feet, biking, or transit, and it's important that we pay attention to how they're getting around and make things easy for not just cars, but bikes and pedestrians, because we're all pedestrians. There's no doubt about that. We're walking to our cars.
We talked about what's going on outside schools a few minutes ago. I'm curious as to what's going on inside. I go back to not too many years ago when there was a very active anti-smoking campaign going on, and much of it was conducted through the schools because the kids do have a significant influence on their parents on such things. Are schools making this whole environmental thing something that they're working with the children on, Craig?
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually was in a meeting last week with Mary I Country Day School, MICDS, out there, and they have a great group of teachers and they're in the administration, and they're looking at all it's almost overwhelming of what they're looking at. They're looking at full solar projects. They're looking at building a new building out there, so they're looking to have that LEED certified, and I think they're going for gold on that. But then you get down to the kids.
Gold is a certification.
Gold certification.
Level.
Sorry, we get that lingo. Sorry about that. Yeah. So we look at these different aspects of what the kids are doing, and the kids are wanting to recycle their batteries from home. They're wanting to make sure they're using both sides of their paper at school. They had Printer Free Friday. They actually took a big cardboard box, decorated it, said no printing, and put it over the printer so no one could print on Friday. So you had to make other, you know, just read which instead. So they're making a lot of efforts. It's pretty impressive.
Jane, that's the answer, isn't it? I mean, the kids, they're the future.
It's one of the answers, but adults have to make the change too. Adults have to look at how, and when we change our thinking and we become aware of waste, when Jay said the question about, you know, why are people sitting in the drive-through lanes of banks or fast food restaurants or whatever, when you become aware of the fact that you have a choice to turn that key off, and that becomes part of your decision-making in a way that doesn't overwhelm you with everything else you have to think about. When we talk about green at the Earthway Center, one of the pieces of advice we give is pick something that works well for you, that's going to have an influence, that's going to be beneficial for you, and start there and grow that knowledge base, grow that practice base in the same way that people have grown their knowledge and grown their choice-making savvy about food products because of nutrition facts and about toxics in food. And now everybody's, you know, going to cook their rice in 6 times more water because all of a sudden we know about arsenic in rice. You add to your knowledge base and you integrate it into your life. And that's how change happens.
But it's a tough job, Emily. I think of how long it took people really to wear seatbelts. You know, it took forever to make that happen, and their lives were at stake.
Right. It seems like a simple choice.
Yeah.
I just wanted to jump in and say something about green schools, because I do think that it's a really critical place to be focusing our energies. 1 in 5 Americans goes to school every day. That's like 1.2 million Missourians. So it's a big chunk of our population. And at the national level, the U.S. Green Building Council has a very strong green schools movement. And in fact, this Saturday, they're launching their first annual Green Apple Day of Service. And they're encouraging people to do projects at their schools locally all over the country. And we have about a dozen different things that are going on here. Ferguson Florissant is doing a Lights Out Hour and Waste-Free Lunch Day. Parkway is installing at Barrett Elementary School 25 kilowatts of solar panels as part of that effort. So there's a very strong involvement by our local schools, but also this is part of a national movement to address where we're learning, which is really important.
Actually, Parkway is putting solar panels 25 kilowatts on every school in their district in a public-private partnership with Brightergy Solar. It's a solar leasing program, and students in all those schools will relate to those solar panels in math and science and literacy lessons, and their schools become a learning lab then.
Now, the event you mentioned, Emily, on Saturday is not the only thing happening
that's
on
true.
Saturday.
No.
We'll talk about that in a couple of moments, and that's one of the reasons you're here, to talk about the Missouri Botanical Garden event. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Back to the phones now. Let's bring in Matt. He's calling from DuPo. Go ahead, Matt.
Yes, sir. I'm a kind of a younger man, and I think there's a lot of younger kids out there that don't know anything about food or how to grow it or anything, and I have a really nice garden, and I know how to can all my food, and I try to be as self-sustainable as I can, and I think if we could get a lot more people on the same page, it would just be a huge positive impact on everybody in the environment. And even, you know, there's tons of public schools that have acres and acres of tillable land that just gets wasted by grass when you could be planting food and making money and not having to do near as much maintenance. I don't know. I just can't see why people can't get onto the gardening kick.
Matt, thanks very much. I think people are as slowly but surely turning to that. Jean, you were reacting to what Matt was saying.
Well, we're all sitting here nodding and smiling. When food became an environmental issue, that was the greatest thing for
right.
me and my professional interests, because food makes people happy, and it engages you, you know, in your heart and your mind and your circles of friends. And it is an environmental issue because it has to do with social justice, how food is delivered, with land use, with transportation and fuel reduction, with obesity and all kinds of things. And it's fun and it's delicious. And Matt, I hope you had a good year for tomatoes this year, despite the drought. When people put their hands in the dirt in a pot or in a raised bed or whatever, you actually reconnect to the planet that we live on. And then you produce stuff that you can eat and share with your friends, and it makes you more healthy. Maplewood Richmond Heights School District really transformed school performance by integrating school food into that transformation process, got students more healthy, improved graduation rates. They have chickens at their early childhood center, and the kids tend the chickens and they eat the eggs. It's a really burgeoning center. Food as a center of sustainability, literacy, and practice is the best.
And the move toward organic these days, Greg, is certainly following the path that you want to have followed.
Absolutely, yeah. Getting rid of the chemical use, and you're seeing, you'll see, I mean, used to be able to walk in, you know, just the standards, Schnucks and Shop and Save and Deerberg's, the normal grocery stores you'd walk in. Now you can get a lot of organic products there. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
The one garden thought was the gentleman in Ferguson, and that was part of we're talking about the municipalities with the laws. The gentleman in Ferguson planted his whole front yard as a vegetable garden, and they got written up because his plants were too tall, you know, and so he had to have, it wasn't grooming, but they looked at that and addressed it and said, hey, you know, if he's doing something productive and he's feeding his family. So it was just another aspect of a good way to grow food and change kind of the minds around the local governments of saying, hey, this works. This is okay.
I wonder if when the ticket was being written up, the police car was idling at the time.
At the curb. And did they slip him a tomato?
Let's go back to the phones. We'll bring in someone we hear from with some regularity on this program, State Representative Rory Ellinger. Rory, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you, Don. I think it's been 3 or 4 months since I've called. I try to keep it at a minimum, although I listen to your show every day. I think it's one of the things we want to mention, perhaps, is because I'm frequently a critic, and that's Ameren has entered into a really wonderful settlement with the Public Service Commission that maybe some of your very fine participants can discuss, which is going to result in multi-million-dollar energy saving in the area by refitting houses and so on, and it's very positive. It's carrying out what they had agreed to. So that's all on the positive side. On the negative side, it's something, and that's these issues that are revolving around mobile nuclear reactors. There's going to be a big push in the state legislature that we're going to be developing these at the site of Callaway 2. We have a major problem of lack of jobs in Missouri.
you know, all sorts of promises that there'll be a lot of jobs and so on. And their nuclear development would be like the size of a nuclear reactor that would run a nuclear submarine. Supposedly a big demand for these. This is not so much a local problem as it will be a statewide issue. And I would be interested in, if it's not too far off the subject, if any of your panelists would like to comment on that. I personally have to give this a lot of thought myself, and I'm worrying about it already because there's going to be a big push for Missouri to adopt legislation to approve these things being developed at Callaway 1. Thank you.
Rory, thanks so much for the call. Who would like to respond? Emily,
well,
go ahead.
I would just say that it is an incredibly complex issue, the issue of making power. You know, we're all using it all the time. We're responsible for addressing that. And I think that, you know, at this point, and we heard this a lot, I think, in some of the political rhetoric recently, we need to be, you know, getting our power from lots of different places. But in the future, I think we really need to be focusing on the cleanest possible kinds of energy. And the cleanest possible kind of energy is the kind that isn't used. So the more efficient that we can be and the more that we can conserve, the less demand there is to be building new power plants, whether they're coal-burning, natural gas, or nuclear, or renewable. So the less that we're using, I think, is – I mean, I think that's where we want to be focusing our energy. And that's the beauty of the, you know, the Ameren programs that are going to be rolling out here in the next year is that they're focusing on efficiency and encouraging people to implement energy efficiency in their practices. So. Right.
Did you want to add something?
Yeah, one of the first things the Cardinals did was they did some electrical retrofitting down at the stadium. And the first year, they ended up saving over $300,000 in usage just by making sure all the suites, bathrooms had automatic sensors so everything would turn off. They turned off some of their 24-hour lighting upstairs, just little simple mm-hmm. things. And it really wasn't they ended up spending about $45,000 to occur that saving. So that was they're not using it year to year now. So it's amazing. So just looking at those little steps.
That will catch people's attention,
right?
Figures like that.
Right, right.
I think it's really important that citizens and business people and legislators all get as informed as they can about decisions to make, you know, build new things that have a lot of questions about them, like nuclear reactors. The Missouri Coalition for the Environment is the best source that I know of for information about mm-hmm. nuclear power issues. And yes, they are slanted towards one side of that, but if you want to get the information and then be able to make the best decision that you can as a legislator or a business leader or an individual who votes or a shareholder in a utility, that's one really good source of that information. We work really closely with Ameren, Missouri and Ameren, Illinois at the Earthway Center, and the fact that utilities are having part of their business plan campaigns like energy efficiency incentives that help reduce the demand for electricity, that's, again, that shift in thinking and action in sustainability. And we're really looking forward to the announcement of what those incentives are for Ameren. Talking about big businesses going green earlier, small businesses really haven't had the same opportunities because they don't have enough staff to form green teams. They don't have enough buying power to make it possible to, implement a recycling program unless they band together with other small businesses. So those kinds of energy efficiency incentives will really bring more businesses into the dialogue and into the playing field.
And today's economy works against it in some cases, too. I mean, obviously, there are fewer dollars out there to spend. I have to take another break, but we have a tweet here that I just like to read to you. It's kind of food for thought. We were talking earlier about why politicians, with the exception of Rory, don't talk too much about this. This writer says, green is too much like science, which the campaigns are more aggressively avoiding. So food for thought. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about local sustainability in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our discussion. It's really a discussion of what we call a green report card, how well this region is doing in the area of sustainability. My guest in studio, Gene Ponzi, Green Resources Manager at Earthways Center of the Missouri Botanical Garden, Emily Andrews, Executive Director of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the Green Building Council, and Craig Young, founder of St. Louis Green, Inc. Let's go right back to the phones. We have a lot of folks who want to get into the conversation. We'll start it with Jerry calling from O'Fallon, Missouri. Jerry, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. You kind of teed up my question before the break.
I kind of thought I was doing that.
Well, I don't want to put everything through the prism of politics, but I have a lot of people among my circle of friends that view doing anything that helps the environment as endorsing some kind of a liberal agenda. It's almost like you're right to not recycle or drive an SUV. I'm glad, Mr. Marsh, you brought in seatbelts, because 20 years ago, some of the same people were like, when states began to pass these laws, refused to wear their seatbelts because they didn't want to live, they hated the nanny state aspect of it. And I can tell you, with an education in biodynamics, that seatbelts, motorcycle helmets, things like that, they save lives and they save you from serious injury. And the same thing with, it's all of our planet, and I appreciate the work the people there are doing, because so many of these things that are very wasteful really don't affect our lives if we cut them out, like, stopping your car from idling or things like that. And there's so many unconscious ways that we're wasteful that we can address without really making all that much of an effort, and yet you get people that push back because they are not going to let someone tell, someone that's never identified to tell them what to do. So anyway, that's my comment. Thank you very much.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. I don't think we're going to have any quarrel from this panel with regard to what Jerry is saying.
But, waste, how do you transform the idea of waste into something positive that people can do something good with? In the natural world, the model is waste equals food. So every waste product becomes food or habitat for some other living thing. And in the recycling industry, the cans and the bottles and the plastic and the paper and all that get recycled because they've served their original purpose, that all becomes feedstock for manufacturing new products. So part of what sustainability does is it creates networks and it creates connections, which I think enrich life in a lot of ways, where if you have a wasteful practice or if you're a manufacturer and you create a waste product, instead of paying to throw that thing away, like where is away, find somebody who can be an end user for your waste product that becomes feedstock for their product. And that's one of those points of transformation and changing thinking in a positive way, in a constructive way. We were talking in the break about, instead of building new things, what if we had a big push toward repair and restoration? We would have a lot of jobs going for a long time. Not that building new is a bad thing, but yikes, we have a lot of things that we need to keep up too. So pivoting on some of those points of waste and making them be something that people can go, oh, that could be beneficial to me. Lot of dialogue necessary. So folks like Jerry, who's hopefully having the conversation with his friends out there, can stimulate some of those pivot points.
But we are a disposable society. I mean, we everything we buy or bring into our homes is something we fully intend to throw away.
And we're paying for it.
Well, I know.
Making those hidden costs visible gets people's attention.
Right. Well, one of the big things with, like, municipalities, and I kind of joke with my other unliberal friends.
You have some?
Just a couple. I won't call out their names. But we joke. It's like, if you're recycling in your municipality is actually getting a rebate. They're getting paid for those that so that they made, that's helping somebody along the line. So when you can tie it to the dollar and the cents part of it, they starts to click with them. Oh, wow, maybe this isn't so wasteful. Because, you look at some of the big corporations that are in the green building and with the green building and with the green business challenge. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are catching on to it really makes economic sense. That's where we're starting to see a huge shift.
Let's return to the phones, and this time we'll talk to Gary in St. Genevieve. Gary, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you. I put a 600-gallon plastic tank on my gutters to catch rainwater, but in 3 months' time, I didn't catch
any. Good timing.
I had a condensate pump on my air conditioner and pumped that water into that tank, and in 2 weeks' time, I had filled that tank just off of the drain water on my air conditioner, and we used it to water our plants with. And it paid for itself in about, it'll pay for itself in a month.
Wow.
There you go.
Getting different parts of those systems, different parts of those budgets to talk to each other. Do you pay your water bill on the basis of use, Gary?
Yes.
So you really saw savings in a droughty summer like this.
Yes, and we also changed all of our lights out to LED bulbs and saved a whole lot on our electricity, too.
Fantastic.
Well, I'd vote for Gary.
Gary, we appreciate your call. I know the panel does as well. Let's take one more. Anyone want to comment to Gary's comments?
Good work.
Good work, right. Okay, right. Well, I think those are the initiatives that we see people doing. It's just that, you know, trying something new. Rain barrels are so – I mean, MSD yep. has that giveaway in May. I mean, I say giveaway. They're $50, and you order them and – you know, away you go, and just, I mean, you can start catching
right.
your, you
the
know,
River DePere Watershed Alliance makes rain barrels out of Coca-Cola syrup barrels and car wash soap barrels and makes those available, and it supports an organization that educates people about rainwater harvesting.
Everything Simple. Can be used for something else.
Absolutely.
If you put a little imagination to it, right? Yeah. Let's bring in Tom calling from Afton. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I would just hope that any policymaker like the one we had call in when thinking about new nuclear power in Missouri would include an assessment of the New Madrid Fault and what an earthquake would do to that. You know, after Fukushima so recently, we've got a big fault line, and, you know, right here in Missouri, and the biggest earthquake in North American history, I think. And so anytime we talk about nuclear in Missouri, I hope that that would be a big part of it, assessing that risk.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Well, this is a concern that is expressed often, particularly after
science.
Fukushima. Pardon?
It was science.
Yeah.
Right.
Rears its testy head again.
We have Anna from Troy, Missouri, is asking us why Missouri doesn't have recycling of aluminum cans and bottles like Iowa does. I actually thought that
are
we
they
did.
On the,
are you talking about
5 cent?
Anna, about a bottle bill buyback program?
This is an email.
Email, right? Yes. We actually, Columbia, Missouri was mm-hmm. the first city in the country and the only city in the country for many years to have a buyback program where you would literally take your cans and bottles back to a store and put them in a vending machine and you get your deposit back from a bottle. That it took four initiative petitions to repeal that, and Columbia no longer has it. And there are some states that do have buyback programs. Missouri is not one of them, but we do, on the other hand, have really good recycling programs. And materials like aluminum, for sure, has a lot of value in the recycling process. Glass can be readily processed, so you may not be able to get 10 cents back at the vending machine, but that material definitely gets recycled, made into new stuff.
We have an email here from Adana in Crestwood, which I'll read. The new Clayton Police Department has the largest solar array in the state of Missouri, providing one-third of the power for the entire multi-story building, while on sunny summer days it can provide up to two-thirds of the power for the building. It was partially funded by the Energize Missouri program via the federal stimulus green building program. As a result of the success of the green building programs instituted by the city of Clayton, they are now eligible for additional funding from the federal stimulus, thus allowing them to get other programs off the ground. It's been win-win. You're all familiar with that?
Yes,
Diane?
Sure are.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm not so familiar with what the federal government doing is with this green stimulus program. What is going on there?
Those are the stimulus funds that rolled out several years ago.
ARRA, the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act funds.
Okay. Yeah, and so some of those came through the state of Missouri, the Energize Missouri, that came through the Department of Natural Resources and was available
to
municipalities mm-hmm. to take advantage of for things like solar panels or energy efficiency retrofits or lighting retrofits, mm-hmm. things like that. So.
Larger communities got their funds directly, like the city of St. Louis, that has used those funds in part to develop a sustainability plan for the city of St. Louis. Smaller political entities applied through the Department of Natural Resources, and there were certain programs that could be used. To the credit of the program, you could go from real garden variety energy efficiency all the way up to the installation of renewable energy. And places like Clayton have really taken good advantage of that.
So government has gotten involved to this
yes.
Absolutely. Degree.
Oh, yes.
But more government assistance and impetus from government necessary, right?
I think this is an ongoing process, and it's never going to stop because once you've done the energy audit once and made the improvements, you need to be going back and measuring again. So it's the same thing in our own homes and at businesses, and you don't just implement a policy; you have to make sure it's actually being used day in and day out, and that you're tracking it. And so I think the ongoing role of government is really key in this and keeping things moving.
One of the things all of you guys are about is education, obviously. That's the important ingredient, and we've made that point today. But that process continues on Saturday, Gene, and I know you want folks to know about what you're doing and how they can become involved.
This is the 11th year that the Earthway Center of Missouri Botanical Garden is putting on what we now call our Green Homes and Great Health Festival. And we've integrated in the last 2 years planetary health with personal health, trying to make some of those connections more visible. It will be Saturday, September 29th at Missouri Botanical Garden from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. There will be over 100 green exhibitors involved in this. And one of a characteristic of this festival that we've always been really proud of is that people come to this event with their questions. Like, the level of literacy and the level of engagement of your callers today is really impressive. People get this stuff
and they
want to know more, and they want to put it to use, and they want to share what they're doing. So that kind of dialogue happens among festival goers and between people who come to the festival and the exhibitors that are there with the water conservation, energy conservation, landscaping upgrades, energy audits, etc., solar power, green cleaning resources. We also have a partnership at the garden with Siteman Cancer Center, Barnes Jewish Hospital, and the Washington University School of Medicine that brings in the great health aspect of this festival. So, for example, on Saturday, you'll be able to talk to health experts about your health concerns. There'll be free screenings. There'll be free flu shots at this festival. And the Siteman Cancer Center's 8 Ways to Stay Healthy and Prevent Cancer, which are some pretty garden variety measures, some of them, reiterating that to people and reiterating the importance and the value of the actions that you take, that's a lot of what comes out of the Green Homes and Great Health Festival. Ameren, Missouri, is the presenting sponsor. And once again, there's Ameren, the energy advisor, promoting energy efficiency, putting out some dollars to help bring this kind of engagement and this kind of education to the public arena for folks to implement in their personal lives, in our day-to-day lives, as well as in our schools and our workplaces.
And that's going to be happening Saturday at the Garden,
From
9 to 4.
That's right. And there is a dedicated website that has all the information about lively presentations and the exhibitors and the children's activities and the local food and the green marketplace for cool stuff to buy. All of that is at greenhomesstl.org.
Okay, we'll put a link to that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Time is a waste in here, but I want to get in a quick call from Liddy in Belleville, Illinois, because I think she's going to raise an issue that many of us have wondered about. Liddy, go ahead, but it's got to be quick.
Yes, I've just wondered if there's any discussion. You always hear about replacing your light bulbs at home, but you see giant parking lots and retail Targets and malls and everything lit up all night, every night. And I know there's going to be a mandate that you have to go green with your light bulbs at home. I wonder if retailers are under the same issue.
Do we know?
I'm not aware of anything mandate wise, but I do know some of the bigger retailers, the Targets, the Walmarts, their sustainability programs are exceeding most. I mean, the Walmarts is setting a whole new bench level of what they're doing, and they're going for their zero waste by 2015. I actually spoke with some of their reps a little bit ago, and they changed out 2/3 of their canopy lights to LED so that they're saving money. So that is happening. I did talk to another competitor of theirs, and they said they're really making it rough on them,
right.
So
because
they're raising the bar so high.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a focus.
And companies that maintain parking lots for their employees, Merits is a really good example, is retrofitting their parking lots with LEDs. And part of what the Green Business Challenge educates these business leaders about is also take into account how much light do you really need out there? Can you reduce the amount of light pollution? Can you reduce the amount of energy used even as you make those things more efficient?
Just a few seconds left, but I have a note here on this computer saying a wind company in Fort Madison, Iowa just laid off 500 people. I mean, there's a message there, too. I mean, there's so much that could be done, and it's just not happening.
And I just saw a bulletin yesterday about a group of retailers petitioning Congress to extend the wind tax credits. Companies that have invested in wind energy, whether those are through renewable energy credits like our Ameren Pure Power program or actually, you know, putting up wind power production themselves. We still need those kinds of incentives for renewable energy. Do we really still need them for fossil fuels?
We're going to have to let that question just hang there for a moment. That's Gene Ponzi, a Green Resources Manager at the Earthways Center at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Also with me in studio, Emily Andrews, Executive Director of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the Green Building Council. Craig Young, founder of St. Louis Green, Inc. It's been a fast hour, folks. Thanks so much for being with us. Hope you have a great event Saturday at the Missouri Botanical Garden from 9 to 4.
Thanks for your interest in Green.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about branding the St. Louis area, retaining talent, and attracting people, tourists, and businesses. We want your ideas for a slogan for the city. Use the hashtag #BrandingSTL on Twitter or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.